Your brain needs support, and new Ollie Brainy Chews are a delightful way to take care of your cognitive health. Made with scientifically backed ingredients like Thai ginger, L-theanine, and caffeine, Brainy Chews support healthy brain function and help you find your focus, stay chill, or get energized. Be kind to your mind and get these nootropic chews at Ollie.com. That's OLLY.com. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease.
Welcome to Sarah Gonzalez Unfiltered. Happy Monday. Hope everyone had a fantastic weekend. I did because I got new shoes. And they are, if we could get the shoe cam, maybe, perhaps. Yeah, look at these. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Thank you. Thank you. God, thank you. I have to keep my shoe game on point because now you can actually see them. So thanks to my husband for those. So we've got a ton of wild stuff to get into, including Christy Noem killing her dog. I'm going to talk to my panel about that today. Sorry, not just dog, but puppy. Killing her puppy and like bragging about it. Wild stuff. But first, I want to, this has been weighing kind of on my heart all weekend when I saw it. And I just wanted to talk about this video that you may have seen. It went viral over the weekend on the platform formerly known as Twitter, in which a young woman who is holding a small infant talks about, apparently this is like a new thing that people are talking about why they broke up. And so she's talking about why she and her partner broke up. Here is that video if you missed it.
Normalize posting why you broke up on the internet.
I was struggling with postpartum depression 2.5 weeks after giving birth. So my partner thought that I was asking for too much when I was asking him to be home and spend time with me and love me and love his son and be there for me. But because I wasn't doing the dishes or doing the laundry or making him food, I wasn't a good enough partner and I was asking for too much. And he didn't want to be, like, do things like boyfriend girlfriends do. Like, he didn't want to snuggle or cuddle or like love me or tell me that I was beautiful or tell me that he was proud of me. So he kicked us out like 3 weeks postpartum. And my baby is 9 weeks postpartum today. And if he sees this or if his friends see this, you know that I'm right. You know that's exactly what happened. I have the most beautiful son, but I'm still postpartum depressed. I'm still struggling. So I hope he's happy.
Now, I know that we are kind of like in the habit of dunking on the left all the time, but I just really, like, that video just made me really sad. It just kind of broke my heart. And that's all I said. That's all I posted. Okay. I literally just said, this makes me sad. I wish I could find this woman and give her a hug. And the amount of like negative, mean responses I received just from saying this is sad was kind of shocking to me. There was one that was like, come on, Sarah, what do you believe all women now? You handled the Trevor Bauer accuser so great and now you just believe all women? And, you know, there's like, well, that's what happens when you spread your legs before marriage. Should have thought about that first. And I feel like we are losing our humanity a little bit. Like, look, I know she has a nose ring. She looks like she's probably a giant liberal. I am sure that there is more to the story, okay? I'm sure that she shares some responsibility for whatever the full story is. And clearly, she didn't make the best choices in life because she just had a baby out of wedlock. I got it. But you have a woman who, she just had a baby, right? So regardless of the circumstances, she just had a baby. And this is now a broken home because she is no longer living with the baby's father. She is now off on her own with the baby. So that in and of itself is sad, okay? She says she has postpartum depression. And you know what? she sounds very unstable, so I believe her, because postpartum depression is a very real thing. A woman's body goes through insane, very quick hormonal changes right after giving birth that can cause all sorts of problems. Plus, if you have a baby who doesn't sleep, that just compounds the issue. Trust me, I know from personal experience how bad it is when you are going through serious sleep deprivation. I didn't have postpartum depression with either of my boys, but I remember going to one of my postpartum checkups where they ask, you know, how are things going? They kind of give you like a postpartum screening, postpartum depression screening. And both of my boys were very, very difficult, very complex newborns and infants. And after my older son was born, I remember just being so sleep deprived and just so tired. And, you know, you're going through the hormonal changes. And I remember, you know, I couldn't get him to stop crying and nobody could tell us why. And I was so frustrated because I didn't understand what I was doing wrong. And did I mention I was just incredibly exhausted all the time? And, you know, my doctor's over there screening me for signs of postpartum depression. And she's like, are you depressed? And I remember I just started crying and I was like, I'm not depressed, but I am just so tired. And if I could just get some sleep, I feel like I would be okay. But I'm just so tired. And I say all that to say, like, the changes that your body goes through are very real. So I feel like we should give this woman a little grace that even if she has contributed to the problem that she now faces, a young girl who admits she has postpartum depression, who is managing a child by herself, is sad. And it's also just not a good situation for the baby, by the way. And I just hate to think that we're living at a time that we can't just have empathy for someone who's going through something painful, even if they perhaps maybe contributed to the problem. But here's the other part of the discussion that bothered me so much. And it's something that I really want to ask you guys, the audience, to weigh in on. Okay. There were a lot of people who blamed the girl for having a baby out of wedlock. That, well, this is your fault. Shouldn't have spread your legs. Right. Got it. It's not something that we should be promoting. And in fact, by the way, we should be having constructive conversations as a society about how that is not something to emulate. You should not do that. That is a path to destruction. We should be telling society that the path to success is to choose the right partner, get married, and have kids in that order. But if we talk about being a pro-life movement and we want to move the culture to value life more, is it helpful? This is a question that I want to ask. Is it helpful to shame women who have chosen life? Because the fact of the matter is, there are many abortions in this. I mean, most of the abortions in this country are done by single women, okay? And presumably, some of the issues are that they are concerned about being judged by society for being a single mom. There's a lot of shame that comes along with that, which, again, is fine. There should be to a degree. But is it helpful to our cause to shame someone for making a bad choice to hook up before marriage, but then they made a good choice and chose life and we still shame them? Like, at a certain point, this just seems like a losing position. That's not constructive to the cause, right? Like, if we want more young women to choose life, then shouldn't we stop shaming them for choosing life? Again, is it ideal? No. Should we enable it? No. But the reactions that I've seen to that video are literally perpetuating abortion culture. If we want more women to choose life, we need to become a little bit more empathetic to these women who are choosing life. They are scared of getting judged by society, and we're proving to them that that's exactly what we're going to do to them. And it just, at a certain point, feels mean-spirited and destructive to this cause to do it once the baby is already there. Got it. She's living the consequences of spreading her legs before, like, did you see her? She's living the consequences of spreading her legs before marriage. I don't think that she needs anyone to tell her she should have done it differently. I think she's realizing that right now. But if she's just going to get a bunch of people shitting on her on the internet now that she has actually had the baby and chosen life, we're just never going to win that argument. It's just, I've thought about it all weekend after I saw that. And I really would love to hear you guys. I want to hear from you in the comments, or you can, you know, call our welfare check number. But where is the line in this national conversation where if we want less abortion and if we want the culture to move to a more pro-life culture, at what point does it become counterproductive and destructive to shame a woman for having a baby out of wedlock and choosing life? I would love to know what you guys think. Now, that being said, when we come back, I have absolutely no problem shitting on and shaming Kristi Noem for bragging about killing her puppy. Yes, you heard me correctly. What the hell? More on that when we come back. First, I'm so happy this segment is sponsored by Preborn. And as Mother's Day approaches, I want to highlight for you an organization that you want to talk about caring deeply for mothers who are choosing life. That is Preborn. They have this network of clinics that exists exclusively to offer love, life, and support to pregnant women who are feeling scared and alone. They're feeling like they might be judged if they have this baby out of wedlock, and they're being pressured to make the ultimate choice. One that will not only sacrifice the life of their baby, but will also take a piece of their heart, even though the left is lying to them. These mothers regret this decision that they are forced and pressured into. And when a distressed mother comes to Preborn, she's actually going to be welcomed with open arms and is offered a free ultrasound to see and hear that baby inside of her. And that is oftentimes when they realize, oh my gosh, the left has lied to me. This isn't a clump of cells. This is a baby. And it is up to me. God has entrusted me to nurture this baby. And so once that happens, she ultimately usually ends up choosing life for her baby. So this Mother's Day, you can help bring life to both a mother in need and an at-risk baby. One ultrasound is only $28. Five ultrasounds are $140. Every penny goes towards loving mothers and babies as well. And when you become a monthly sponsor, you get to actually receive pictures and stories of the lives that you helped to save. This is a very, very worthy cause. So however much you feel comfortable donating securely, you can do so over at preborn.com/Sarah. How many babies' lives can you save over at preborn.com/Sarah? Joining me now, we have Stuberger, host of Stu Does America. There he is.
That's
along
me.
With Pat Gray, host of Pat Gray Unleashed. You can find both of those on The Blaze, of course, or wherever you get your podcasts. Make sure that you are subscribed to these gentlemen. I am so glad you guys are here. Perfect timing to talk about Governor Kristi Noem. Okay, this is... When did this break? Like sometime late Friday? And I was like, I missed it going into the weekend. So Kristi Noem just released a book, and it's called No Going Back, The Truth on What's Wrong with Politics and How We Move America Forward. And actually, I think it's not even available yet.
I don't think it's out yet.
So she gave it, I guess, ahead of time. She gave it to certain news outlets. And so some of them received a copy. And apparently in it, she admitted to killing her 14-month-old puppy. Oh, also a goat, which I don't know, somehow gets a little bit less sympathy for me. But she had a dog named Cricket, she said, a wire hair pointer, about 14 months old, and that the dog had an aggressive personality and needed to be trained to be used for hunting pheasants. But I guess the dog didn't learn quickly enough. And so she said that she took the dog out and just assassinated it, just shot it in the head.
There's someone on the grassy knoll. She was like,
It was Kristi Noem in the back with the gun straight to the head.
It's a very weird Clue game.
Yeah. Now, she did say that the dog was showing signs of aggression, I said. But she said, I hated that dog and that Cricket had proved herself untrainable and dangerous to anyone she came in contact with and less than worthless as a hunting dog. Aww. So at that point, she realized she had to put the dog down. Why would you admit this in a book that you wrote about yourself? Why? Knowing what she knew or should have known about, Mitt Romney put his dog on the roof of his car and got raked over the coals for it. Why did you think that assassinating your dog was going to be a good look at the same time, by the way, that you, there are talks about you being the vice presidential nominee. There's literally no way that happens now.
There's a bunch of parts to this, which I think are fascinating. First of all, the decision itself, right? Like, we've all had dogs that are a little rambunctious. I guess this dog attacked a bunch of chickens. Now, of course, you're training it to hunt animals. So, like, what do you think it's going to do if it gets around chickens? Kind of on you to not let it escape to attack your neighbor's chickens.
Right.
But I guess she really didn't like the dog. And like, there are cases where you have a really aggressive dog and like, you know, I mean, especially when they attack humans, like, you know, we all know that there are cases like, where a dog is put down after something like that. Usually humans though. And usually after a long struggle with trying to train them.
Right.
And of course, not done in the backyard, a gravel pit with your own weapon in front of a bunch of construction workers, which is just a very strange thing to do. Now, some people have pushed back and said, look, you don't understand farm life. And it's true. I do not. Okay. I grew up in Connecticut. I was born in New York. I do not understand farm life at all. So like, I don't know. I know weird stuff happens on the farm. I don't want to know what's going on the farm. It seems like a crazy life. But to me, this is not normal farm life, right? Like, this isn't, like, I don't know. Like,
this isn't like your horse broke its leg and you have to put it down because there's no way that you can save it.
Which, by the way, she then admitted to doing that three times over the past month. so she's also
she just really likes killing animals.
And the goat,
yes,
right?
And the goat.
And, like, the sad end of the story was, like, her daughter came home and, like, where's our dog? It's like she killed it in a gravel pit in the backyard. So all that is like step one on this. But you hit the, I think the more, like, I don't know. Like her defense was, well, it's legal in the state. Okay. All right. Well, fine. It's legal in the state to shoot your dog if they're aggressive. But like beyond that, this is not opposition research. This is not something that came down leaked by the Daily Beast. This is in your own freaking book. And it's just impossible to, like, there are two different types of candidates right now going for the VP for Trump, right? The two different models, okay? You have the, let's call it the Mike Pence model, right? Who is a person who is calm and collected and can go on and kind of give a nice, you know, no harm done justification of your policies on and be very boring and not make any news and never stand out, right? That is really the Kristi Noem profile. People think of Kristi Noem because she's, you know, she's good looking, that like maybe she's this electric candidate. She's not. She's actually legitimately boring in interviews, which I don't mind. I don't mind my politicians being a little boring. But she's not this. She's not Vivek Ramaswamy, J.D. Vance style of VP, who's going to be like, I hate to use it in this kind of sense, but an attack dog on media. That's not who she is, right? She's someone
she kills
who
kills the attack dogs,
apparently. So she, you know, she's this type of person is supposed to be calm and like hold everything together and not make news. And then she's got other issues that have been discussed at length. But then this is like, how would you not know? The American people don't like their dog shot. You know, like Lisa, my wife, had there was an incident with my dog capturing a squirrel recently. Okay.
Oh no.
And this happened in front of Lisa. She saw it all happen. She lost her mind. She blew out her voice screaming at the dog to drop it. She was legit traumatized by this. This is a squirrel. Okay. A squirrel dying traumatized her. That's how the American people feel. And if you're a candidate going for VP under the pretenses that you're a play it safe, like don't rock the boat type of candidate, you have to know what your farm life looks like to the average mom. And shooting your dog in the head is not a good look.
It's just so stupid.
It's so ridiculous.
So you mentioned the chickens, and I'm glad that you mentioned that, Stu, because I actually have a dog that I adopted from the shelter. And the reason that the dog was brought to the shelter, I think there were several reasons. One was like they had way too many dogs. It was like a family of nine Great Pyrenees puppies who were brought in. But the problem that they listed on the form was that they were killing the chickens. So you know what that family did? Brought them to the shelter, shot them in the head.
Yeah, you could understand that, which is what I was saying on my show this morning. Why don't you take it to the Humane Society?
Right.
Take it to a shelter.
And by the way,
to somebody who has a farm away from you.
Right, right. We have had no problems with we have cats in the house. We have had no problems with that dog being aggressive to anyone else.
I mean, if the dog tore somebody's throat out, you know, a human being, and killed a person,
right.
You know, maybe you shoot the dog then.
Right.
But that's not the case. She just didn't like it. It just didn't behave very well.
And it was a puppy.
Jeez. Yeah. I don't want to live in the gnome household. I'll tell you that. You know, on the other hand, it's amazing that there are people who are all up in arms over this, but perfectly fine with killing babies.
Mm.
And the more babies that you advocate killing, the better. It's just not done at a gravel pit. It's done instead at a Planned Parenthood clinic. And that's okay. To Democrats, that's going to be fine. And we can go ahead and kill as many babies, 64 million and counting right now. But they will get all up in arms over a dog. And I am too. I'm bothered by it. And I think it was a stupid move. But a little perspective might be good here too.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, you bring up a great point. And I always find it so fascinating to read these polls that are like, which would you rather save if there was a fire and you could only save one, your dog or a complete stranger? It's a human.
Mm-hmm.
And so many people will pick the dog.
Yeah, I bet.
I'll bet. Instead of a person.
Right. Now, that's dark and not right, but it also is something to be aware of if you're going to put a story about shooting your dog in your book. Right?
Yes, yes.
Like, you know, it's something.
And that's where we are as Americans.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, right? I look, it's a bad point. We should not be there. We should not be there. And your point is right on the money. Right? Like, it should disturb us far more that 64 million babies have been lost. Due to abortion, and the number worldwide is over a billion,
right?
A billion people that should be here that aren't, and that's should be much more of a problem. But like, just from a political malpractice angle, the fact that you admit to this, and this isn't
it's a no-brainer.
Yeah, like
I don't put that in the book.
No, and I do. I'd love to know what you guys think of this. Like, I actually thought going into this that Noam was in the top tier of candidates for Trump. I think he always talks about wanting someone out of, quote unquote, out of central casting. She fits that very well. She isn't, I mean, we've had her on 20 times. I generally like her. I mean, like, I think, you know, she was great during COVID. She was probably the most popular governor in America on the conservative side during the COVID period. She had some falling off after that, but generally speaking, like, you know, I think she's fine. And she is the type of person that can go on and do an interview about a topic, unlike, like, let's say a Sarah Palin, who would struggle with areas that she didn't know and kind of sound like she's not like that. She's a strong politician. She knows what she's doing in that realm.
Yeah.
And then you see this, though. I really do think that this ends her VP consideration. I can't imagine Donald Trump picking her after this. Do you guys agree with that?
Yeah.
Yes. Although sometimes he surrounds himself with like the worst picks that I'm like, why would you pick that person that I'm like, oh God, please don't make this be the part where he's like, you know what?
Yeah.
Kristi Noem would be a great VP. I'm going to go with her. So please don't do that. But do you think in this book, she seems to be very real and raw and truthful. Do you think there's a chapter about her extramarital affair?
You know, I think she knew politics well enough to not include that one.
Interesting.
That is interesting.
Huh.
You know, I will say, you know, we've worked on books with Glenn over the years and you know a lot of people who've written these books. There is an appetite from the publisher for your salacious stories. You can't just make it all fluff or no one will buy it. I guess she chose to go with the dead dog story over some other stories you may have mentioned. And,
she'd have been better off going with the extramarital affair, right?
I mean, if there was a redemption
I murdered my dog, I think the other story's better. I think it's more sympathetic.
Well, yeah, and the other part about the dog thing is it's not like, you know, I learned a terrible lesson that day that X, Y, and Z, I made a terrible mistake. It's like, this is me making tough decisions. I'll continue to kill your dog all day long. You want me to come over your house and kill your dog for you? I'll do it. Like, that's kind of
like
the attitude
it.
Of the...
I like it. I'll take it right outside and put a bullet in its skull.
Yeah, she's kind of...
that.
Yeah, she's making it to say, I'll make tough decisions. Well, not all tough decisions are good decisions. Like, even if you're like, okay, what I did, I felt bad about this. I drove 100 miles away. I couldn't find a shelter. I just released the thing. I don't know what happened. That's a much better story than shooting your dog.
Yeah. It is.
Like in the head, right?
Yeah. Okay, so to your point, I'll read a little bit of this response where, to your point, Stu, she just doubled down, which is just not a good idea. So she said on Twitter, I can understand why some people are upset about a 20-year-old story of cricket. one of the working dogs at our ranch in my upcoming book.
It's so old. You shouldn't even be talking about it. You put it in the book.
Yeah.
The only reason we know about this 20-year-old story is because of you.
So, of course, then she goes on. The book is filled with many honest stories of my life, good and bad days, blah, 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 blah. What I learned from my years of public service, especially leading South Dakota through COVID, is people are looking for leaders who are authentic, willing to learn from the past, and don't shy away from tough challenges. My hope is anyone reading this book will have an understanding that I always work to make the best decisions I can for the people in my life. Not the dogs, though. You're a dog in Christine Ohm's life. You're screwed. And then she goes on to cite South Dakota law that states that dogs who attack and kill livestock can be put down. And then she says, whether running the ranch or in politics, I have never passed on my responsibilities to anyone else to handle, even if it's hard and painful. I followed the law and was being a responsible parent, dog owner, and neighbor. The dog would disagree.
It's funny, too, like the I've never passed on my responsibilities is the exact criticism of her in the women's sports, the trans women's sports issue that really hurt her with conservatives was that she kind of just passed the buck and said, oh, well, this isn't, you know, the NCAA has all these rules and we have to take that into account.
Right.
It was interesting to see her that approach. Look, she's trying to, you know, she's trying to raise her profile with this. It does not seem like it's going to work after this. Frankly, it does feel like that, you know. Like poor Cricket, the VP chances are dead.
R.I.P. Cricket.
That was a little harsher than I meant.
R.I.P. Cricket. All right, let's go ahead and take a quick break. We'll be back with more. We want to thank our sponsor, Birch Gold. So there's a common sense reason gold is pushing to all-time highs right now. Actually, there's several of them. The cost of goods continues to rise despite interest rate controls by the Fed. The national debt continues to skyrocket. And look, I'm just saying there should be like some red alarms going off. It's above $34 trillion now. So who knows when that house of cards is going to come crashing down, but it will. Okay. And we're in a presidential election year that's going to have massive implications on the future of this country, particularly if Sleepy Joe makes it another, well, he's not going to make it another 4 years, but if he gets elected for another 4 years. So there's a lot of instability and uncertainty. Might I suggest turning to Birch Gold Group to have them explain to you how you can diversify your savings into gold with Birch Gold. Okay, you can convert an IRA, just one that you have laying around. You can convert it into a tax-sheltered IRA in gold. It's not going to cost you a penny out of pocket. You need to just at least go get their free, no-obligation information kit explaining how they can help you. You can do that by texting the word Sarah to 989898. Just text the word Sarah to 989898. More anti-Israel protesters swarmed the streets surrounding Saturday evening's White House correspondents' dinner, shouting at the attendees and draping a huge Palestinian flag from one of the windows of the host hotel. And the protests were so bad, apparently, that the president's motorcade had to take a new route than the previous route that they had taken in years past. And I gotta tell you, it couldn't have happened to a more deserving group of people, those White House correspondents. Not sure why this is still a thing that they do, but the protesters said they were there to protest media complicity in genocide, complaining that Palestinian journalists were being killed with full U.S. backing just for reporting on the situation in Gaza. Don't you hate it when the left, like, creates these little radicals, and then instead of, you know, the radicals unleashing on the right, the radicals just unleash on the left because they've been radicalized and they don't like that the left actually is just faking it. They don't actually believe these things. They just like to push these narratives, and then they end up, you know, protesting their own. Oh gosh, makes you so sad. So sad.
Yeah. As Pat has said many times, he just loves it when liberals eat their own. Mm-hmm. And to pull the Pat Gray phrase out here, I think that is something we all enjoy at this time. I mean, they are reaping what they sow. Mm-hmm. Right? This didn't just happen. These people aren't just out there supporting the Hamas cause out of nowhere. They've been schooled by the exact professors, some of which, by the way, are getting the worst of these particular incidents on campus. And, you know, the fact that we're sitting here, like, looking at this and watching all of this fall apart shouldn't be a surprise. Mm-hmm. Right? This is the culture that has been brought to liberal campuses across the country. I mean, you almost see it as like, they're like, we don't really like how out of control these have gotten. But this, you know, colleges are a place where this is supposed to happen and you're supposed to be able to protest and blah, blah. Is it really like, what are you going there for? I thought you were going there to learn things and maybe become an upstanding member of society. And I will also just add this. The conspiracy theory that goes along with this is that the Jews control the world. This ultra-competent evil that the Jews apparently control across all populations is supposedly something that's in existence. Yet they are the worst I've ever seen at genocide. I don't know why they're so bad at it. They can't seem to get their stuff together. They've had this population living within their borders all of this time, and they just left them alone until they came across a giant fence they built to murder and massacre thousands of people. I don't know why they're so incompetent at this one thing after controlling the media in Hollywood this long, but apparently that's what we're supposed to believe.
Yeah.
Yeah, when you're trying to wipe out a population, dropping leaflets and telling them when you're going to do it and where they should go and how they get food is a really bad way to do it. Mm. I think that they don't understand what genocide really is. And so, if Israel wanted to wipe out the 2 million people in Gaza Strip, they would have done it in the first week. Mm-hmm. It'd be over. Mm-hmm. There would be no Palestinians left. They've been trying their damnedest to do this in the most humane way possible while taking out Hamas, because if they don't, this is just going to happen again. Yeah. And they know that because that's what Hamas has told them. So I can't understand how we're handcuffing them, as you know, this administration is handcuffing them and not allowing them to finish the job. They should not finish until Hamas is completely destroyed.
Yeah. I agree.
We wouldn't stop if it was us.
Of course not. Well, and I do feel the need to point out, I mean, there were American hostages that were taken.
Yeah.
And
yep.
We don't hear, I mean, we should be taking that, I think, more seriously than we are. But so as the protesters are swarming the streets outside this White House Correspondents' Dinner, of course, inside there are a bunch of elitists, call themselves journalists, drink their drinks with their pinkies up and sitting around laughing at, you know, all conservatives and Donald Trump and all this. So I want to play a clip of SNL. This is cute because in the article it says SNL Saturday Night Live star Colin Jost. And I would propose the idea that nobody on SNL should be called a star because nobody's watching it anymore. Well, I completely disagree with that. But I want to play Colin Jost roasting Donald Trump. Watch.
But before I begin tonight, can we just acknowledge how refreshing it is to see a president of the United States at an event that doesn't begin with a bailiff saying, "All rise."
No, he's just half dead.
And I would like to point out, it's after 10 p.m. Sleepy Joe is still awake.
Debatable.
While Donald Trump has spent the past week falling asleep in court every morning. Though Fox News said he was just being anti-woke.
Oh my God, that's so funny. So Donald Trump, of course, responded on Truth Social. He said the White House Correspondents' Dinner was really bad. Colin Jost bombed and Crooked Joe was an absolute disaster. Doesn't get much worse than this. I just cannot stand these freaking people. Mm-hmm. It's so funny that we're weaponizing the judicial system against Joe Biden's political opponent. Ha ha ha. Isn't that so funny that he's in court now? Ha ha ha. We're going to pretend like Sleepy Joe is not half dead right there. He can't even open his eyes. He's just squinting. He can barely keep his head up. But we're going to roast Donald Trump. Ha ha ha. Shut up. God, I cannot stand them.
And to your point about the host not being a star, I believe it's Colin Jost.
I've never heard of the guy until today.
And then when you saw him, were you like, I've never seen never that guy seen in
him.
My life?
Really? I've never seen him.
No.
He's also known as Scarlett Johansson's husband. That is another
really?
One of the things he's
no.
known.
No.
Oh, my God.
In real life?
In real life, yeah.
No.
Yeah. No, I mean.
I've never seen the guy before.
He neither.
Never seen him.
They have one funny thing they do on that show, which is at some points, they've done it a few times, it is legitimately hilarious, in that him and his co-host of Weekend Update, Michael Che, who's an African-American gentleman, they write jokes for each other and they read them for the first time on the air, and they do things that are intentionally horrible for the other person to read.
Oh,
so like Che writes very racist jokes for Colin Jost and he has to say them on the air for the first time. It is legit. It's worth watching. He did have one funny line I thought in there. He said something effective. I invited my co-host Michael Che to come here and support, but he decided not to come. So like President Biden, I've also lost all my black support.
Oh,
that's a solid
that's
line.
Good.
That's a solid
yeah,
line.
That's good.
He had a couple. I mean, it is a reminder of how together the media is with these people. With this,
yeah.
These are not this whole like fourth estate. We're holding them responsible. Is bull crap. It's been bull crap for 100 years. Woodrow Wilson was a big part of why we have a White House correspondence dinner in the first place to bring them in. The idea was the administration said, "Hey, these guys are against us all the time. What if we party with them a little bit and get them on our sides?" It has worked. It was the most successful thing probably Woodrow Wilson accomplished, and the legacy is destroying what used to be a really important part of our society to hold the government responsible. They don't do that anymore. They're now party buddies.
Yeah. And they still had this dinner when Donald Trump was president, didn't they?
They had it. He just didn't go.
Yeah.
That's right. I was like, I can't remember what it was that was different about Trump's presidency.
I loved
Good
that.
For him.
Because I hate that freaking dinner. It's such hypocrisy, such garbage. And Trump just said, nope, I'm not doing it.
Yeah.
He didn't.
Yeah. And it is a funny reminder, too, that at least there's been a decent amount of reporting on this. We don't know if it's true or not. But Trump went before he was president. He went to a previous one. It was 14 or 15 when Obama was president.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
they made fun of him in the audience a bunch of times. And some of the reporting was, this is what made him say, I'm running for president. I hate these people.
That's right.
He was tortured, you know, as a kind of a roast victim
at
a previous White House correspondence dinner. I don't know if it's true, but it's a fun one to believe. I want it to
it
be
It did
true.
Happen.
Yeah,
I mean,
it definitely happened.
I don't know if that's his, you know.
His actual reason.
Yeah, but it did happen.
Yeah. And there's just something so gross about MSNBC covering their own correspondent. Like, they're all there and they're covering their own dinner and they're covering their own correspondents who are going up there and making all of these jokes at, you know, the right's expense. It's just so gross, like so self-serving.
Mm-hmm.
These people hate you and they think that they're better than you, clearly, because they think that like that's worth plastering all over MSNBC. And honestly, Fox News probably did it too. I didn't see, but they probably did.
That's very possible. And I have no interest in it. Like, I have no interest in it at all. I think the protester angle is really interesting, though, because it is them eating their own. And, you know, it's funny. Like, I was telling Pat this. Pat is going to be on Studios America tonight, which we actually taped a little bit before this. But we were talking about how I think it's actually kind of unfair to Joe Biden that he gets this Genocide Joe title. I think he's been sufficiently anti-Israel this entire time. What standard are they trying to hold him to here? He is like legitimately, I mean, he has been lukewarm at best to one of our most important allies. And instead of being criticized for that, which he should be, he's called Genocide Joe. How can this guy win? He's been criticizing Israel. He's been telling them, hey, don't go get your hostages out of here. Don't worry about that. This entire time, I think he's been very weak, probably the weakest we've ever seen from a U.S. president in recent memory.
Yeah.
Which, to your point, how many different missiles and drones and stuff did they send over there? And I think this was when it came from Iran.
Yeah.
And only a couple got through. And Joe was like, take the win.
Yeah, take the win.
It's like, they just tried to obliterate us off of the planet. And you're telling us to take a win. Sir, what win is it? I'm not seeing one. To your point, you're right. Which, of course, we all know is why all of these attacks are taking place during a Joe Biden presidency. It didn't happen when the other guy was in. The last guy, none of this happened. Now, all of a sudden, global instability. I wonder why that is. All right. I got to take a quick break, and we will be back with more. I think you guys, I'm bidding you adieu, which I
all right.
think particularly Pat is really sad about.
I am.
He's devastated. Look at him. Look at his eyes.
When I leave the studio, I will start to weep.
Will you? Uncontrollably?
As a man, I will break down and weep open.
Well, I can have you on more frequently if you want.
I would love that.
I would love that. I really would. Really would.
Yeah. We always have fun.
I enjoy our time together. I enjoy our time together. We'll be right back. So my friend and also host of Primetime with Alex Stein is joining me today. Of course, Alex Stein himself, the man, the myth, the legend. And I asked him to come on today because I saw a video of Alex over the weekend being assaulted by some pro-Palestinian protesters over in Austin at the, was it the UT Austin campus?
Yeah.
Okay. So I want to play that, and then I want to get the details from you, Alex. So let's watch Alex.
Get the f*** out of here. We're here at UT Austin, where I just got assaulted by transgender pro-Palestine people. I didn't realize gay for Palestine is actually real, but watch this video.
Hey, can I ask you a question? In Palestine, aren't they mean to trans people? Aren't they mean to trans people?
We're here at UT Austin, and trans people are out here protesting for Palestine, but don't Palestinians throw gay people off roofs?
Hey, sir, can you please
leave? Yeah, no, I'm just gonna hang out right here. Can anybody tell me about, do they do any pride parades?
Dude, what are you
going
to do about
it?
You guys are all idiots.
He stole it. I had to grab it right there. And then watch, I get hit twice. They take me to the ground. And on this, it's about to happen. It was actually pretty wild. And then, of course, you know, Brandon and Paige are with me. But then when this happens, they got a little nervous because there's so many kids and they're all... I don't know. It's just a weird energy when you see all the kids like blocking with those blankets.
Yeah.
And then that's when it got really heavy. And him and I were about to square off, but I'm like, in football, the second guy always gets a flag, Sarah. So I knew if I punched him.
Yeah, right.
And so,
instead,
I flipped the table. Flipped a little table.
Honestly,
it's the best
we're part. Totally justified in that.
Yeah.
I mean, look, you couldn't get in trouble for flipping the table because you had video evidence that they assaulted you and all you did was assault their table. And I would imagine that you probably had some, like, you probably were bigger than all of them.
I was a lot bigger, a lot stronger, and they're on like 10 different antidepressants. So, you know, their minds were all screwed up. But
eat a lot of soy. Actually, you probably
like soy too.
Too,
but it's not even that. But I am a little bit of a boxer. Like, I was even thinking, I was like planning before, I was like, because this guy, I was like, I'm going to pretend like I'm going to punch him in the right, and I was going to jab him in his nose. But then I just thought, I go, you know what? I don't want to get arrested. I don't want to get in any more trouble than I've already gotten myself into in the past, you know, just doing this stuff. So it is always better to be restrained than to, because I'm already antagonizing them a little bit, right? So let's just be
real. Yeah, but I mean, like, you have every legal right.
Of course.
To do that,
oh, yeah.
Right?
They're on campus making a scene, yeah. Like, and they're mad. And listen, a little bit of me is actually empathetic to them because I'm anti-war. I don't really like war. But at the same time, these kids are so hypocritical. They're in Austin, Texas, in this great city, and they're worried about Palestine. Yet if they went over there in the Gaza, that was a transgender person leading that. They would not be accepted. So the same people that they're protesting, you know, for, they wouldn't even be accepted in that country. So I just want to bring hypocrisy. I just want to call it the hypocrisy. Yeah. It's not even that I really like that there's war. I wish there was no war.
Right.
But these kids, they're channeling their energy in not a fruitful way, in my opinion.
Well, also, they can't handle an opposing opinion, clearly.
Oh, no.
Did they... Where do they hit? Like, how do they get you on the ground? Where did they hit you?
Well, two guys hit me. So one guy's grabbed my phone. So I'm kind of like have my leverage. And then a guy hits me in the back and I fall forward, right? Because I'm like leaning forward. And it's like he kind of pushes me my back. So I went to my knees. And then immediately I got up and pushed him to the ground. And then I had to wrestle my phone away. But listen, and I'm going to Sacramento State tomorrow where they're having a Chaz autonomous zone set up. So I put myself out there. I kind of consider myself like a wartime journalist or something. I mean, that's this kind of the mindset that I have that I know I'm probably going to get hit, but I just got to take it and try to be restrained.
Alex, Okay, I want people in the comments to tell me whether you agree with this. Mm-hmm. You would be a conservative hero if you pressed charges on every single one of these idiots who's assaulting you. It's against the law.
I know, but this is the other thing is I've sued AOC. Just once again, I think I'm based in reality. Once you sue somebody, it takes a long time to actually get any sort of justice.
You're not suing them. You just have them arrested.
I know,
completely different process.
Even,
and then I'm telling you, Alex, listen to this. I have a business model for you, okay?
Yeah.
Go there. Once they assault you, you behave legally, okay? Mm-hmm. They assault you, you call the cops and get them arrested, and then you tweet out their mugshots. Everyone
Sarah,
would
you
love
know me.
You.
I know, but Sarah, you know me, and I do want to be loved, but you know I'm a nice guy.
I know, and I'm saying you're too nice because
so I would
these people
feel bad.
Need to be taught a lesson.
But I would honestly feel bad because I know they're a dumb college kid.
What? They just punched you.
And they went to jail. I know, but I don't care. Somebody, you know, punched me. I'm still empathetic to them. I know that sounds crazy. I know. And I'm not trying to say that I'm some bigger man, but yeah, me getting the cops involved, I back the blue, but I also don't like the cops sometimes. You know, I don't want to get in the car,
yeah,
you know.
So. I just think it's so important for these idiots to be shown a lesson, taught a lesson that you are not allowed to just assault people because you don't like what they say.
Well, Let's be serious. You know I like to joke around, and you are right, because I did get hit. I did get assaulted. But you know what's going to happen, Sarah? I've been to a lot of Palestinian protests. I've been to a lot of transgender youth rallies, and I know you've been to a lot of protests. And I think it was Christopher Wray even said that they've gotten threats, the Taliban, and something bad is going to happen at one of these. And I'm saying, and I hope and pray that nothing happens, but it's going to be 9/11-esque. I don't know what it is. I don't know what's going to happen. I can't foresee that, but I can just tell the energy that these kids have. They were so quick to hit me that they would be so quick to shoot a gun, blow up a bomb, or actually hurt somebody. And somebody, if you look at the parallels between 2020 and 2024, we're starting to see kind of similar Summer of Love vibes, but now they're protesting for Palestine. And then the Israel, it could be a Palestine versus Israel protest in New York, and then they start shooting each other. I don't know. And then they say it's civil war. This is pure speculation. My point I'm trying to say is, something bad is going to happen at one of these protests, and they're probably going, and it could be January 6th vibes, or maybe it's an agent provocateur that does it to make somebody look bad. Maybe they make Israel look bad by making an Israel person with an Israel flag shoot a Palestinian. Maybe it's vice versa. But I'm just saying, the energy that I feel at these events, they want something to happen because they want something to either rally around or say, hey, look, they're okay with genocide, so we did genocide here. Just wait and see. I hate it. I hope I'm wrong. But how it's palpable, like the energy,
tension.
Yeah.
Which I would just like to point out. I know we got to go to break, but I would like to point out that Alex is like, I fear that at one of these protests, someone's gonna die. That's why I keep going. that's Alex.
Good Stein. Point. Good point.
All right, stick with me. I've got a video I want to show you that I think you're really gonna like when we come back. So Vice President Kamala Harris was apparently on the Drew Barrymore show called Drew, and I want to just play for you the most cringeworthy piece of media you are going to consume today for sure. Watch.
I've been thinking that we really all need a tremendous hug in the world right now.
Yeah.
But in our country, we need you to be Mamala of the country.
Stop! Oh my God. So the thing that I actually bothers me the most about this clip is, why is she sitting so close to her? There's a huge couch and she is like very, very unreasonably, uncomfortably close to her guest. Why?
Well, Drew Barrymore has a weird track record, but she comes from a Hollywood elite family. She's probably always been wealthy her whole life. And it's similar to when you saw that Howard Stern had Joe Biden on his podcast and didn't ask him one question. And even in the interview, Howard Stern said, the country's doing so great under you. Well, if you have a $750 million in the bank and you only deal with five-star restaurant, you know, employees, then your life is probably great. Drew Barrymore, she probably loves Kamala Harris because her show's doing well. Like, these people are out of touch with reality. And the fact that she's idolizing or putting up, you know, Kamala Harris literally got her job because she basically slept her way to the top. So she's unqualified.
We did it, Joe.
Yeah, we did it. And she stinks. And the fact that she can't tell that how unqualified she is, sad.
You just really need a Mamala.
Mamala.
Mamala, shut up, please.
stream and subscribe to more Blaze Media content at theblaze.com/podcasts.